Chapter 34, The Mystery of the Sphinx and the Pyramid. The eternal reality of the immovable kingdom cannot be described. In the world of dialectics, there is no form, no sound, no color, no feeling, and no thought whatsoever that can be compared with it. The eternal truth can never be told in its entirety. It cannot be passed on from mouth to ear, nor can any pen describe it. That is absolutely impossible, even for the highest initiate. There is only one possibility, that the human being find the answer to the suffocating and urgent questions of life in the sanctuary of his own heart, in the innermost depths of the divine touch, when the delusion of the eye has died. The truth and the reality of the lost fatherland have always been hidden under the shadow of the so-called seventh seal. If a human being tries to humanize the eternal mystery and to press it into the straitjacket of dialectics, he violates it and it escapes from him. What is left is impotent and devoid of liberating power. The most it can achieve is to chain the human being to the wheel of the great illusion. The truth can, to a certain extent, only be exemplified. Whoever wants to know it must live towards it. A person cannot say, "Tell me something about the truth so I can decide whether to approach it or not." Whoever wants to know the truth has to turn to self-activity. Embracing wisdom is a question of pilgrimage right from the start. When a ray of the universal wisdom begins to reveal itself in a pilgrim, this has the sole purpose of enabling him to become active in a calling, saving and helping capacity. That is the secret of the path. God is love. Such a pupil, in fact, begins to arrive in an almost impossible position because he is rent in twain, as it were. On the one hand, there is the absolute impossibility of making the light known to people, but on the other, there is the obligation and the drive to testify of it. These two aspects exclude each other, almost absolutely. In the ancient, absolutely universal symbols, such a situation was represented by a human animal, for example, the Sphinx, a creature with a divine countenance, staring into the indeterminate distances of the dawn, but for the rest, an animal, clawing into and imprisoned by the desert sand. We should not see the Sphinx as being unconnected to the pyramid and its mystery. In ancient Egypt, the classical kings received the epithet, "Living Sphinx image of the Lord of the Universe." That is a sun god, descended into matter. Perhaps you understand this symbol. The human being is a fallen angel in a state of cleavage, one part of the microcosm imprisoned in the original life field, totally incapable of any activity, the other cast down into the dialectical urge for survival. The human being is the Sphinx. The knowledge of this has repeatedly been lost, and not a word of this is mentioned in the Holy Scriptures. It has been lost, just as the Sphinx has repeatedly been totally covered by the desert sands. This sign, hewn out of rock and spanning the ages, is gaped at by tourists. It is said that they feel respect, but they do not understand. Probably many will begin to understand when their illusions of existence are torn to shreds in the impending world developments. Then they may very well remember the column between the front paws of the Sphinx. The story on that column is briefly, Prince Thotmes, the son of an Egyptian king, had ordered the Sphinx to be excavated from the desert sand. He was used to riding around the desert and hunting for wild animals. On one of those hunts, the prince went to rest in the shadow of the Sphinx in the afternoon. He fell asleep and dreamt that the Sphinx began to talk to him. He said, "Look at me, my son Thotmes, I am your father. My face and my heart are turned towards you, for you belong to me. Behold my state of suffocation. I am in danger of being buried by the sand of this desert on which I am lying. I have waited until you will do what was in my heart, for I knew that you were my son, my protector." As a pupil of the spiritual school of the Golden Rosicross, you will understand the language of the Sphinx. You too have excavated the Sphinx, and it is speaking to you ever more clearly. The old lost knowledge of transfigurism has been excavated again in this century, not by studying or reading books, but by pilgrimage, by the process of life, by really going the path, by real exertion, by the radiations of the magnetic power field. You too clearly see the situation of the dialectical human being as that of someone who is held in a suffocating grasp. The grip of this nature is constantly on the point of burying you. The human being is a god who has become a human according to this nature. Let us pose the obvious question, the one logical problem. How can the fallen human being become a god again? How can the prodigal son Thotmes return home? This problem and its solution is given in every universal philosophy. We are humans who are to become gods. The great messengers of humanity were gods who became human in order to show humans how to become gods. If this problem stands clearly before you, you will know it was born in conflict, and that the road to it was toil and trouble. Like Prince Thotmes, you have to excavate your Sphinx, which will pose the great problem to you personally. If you neglect your work for one moment, you will sink back into the bottomless depths of this nature. Then you will feel at one with this world, and you will become accustomed to it again. You must understand that for the defeated soul, the question, how does the fallen human become God again, will develop enough motivation to be able to go the path as a pilgrim to seek the answer to that question. Hence we can say, whoever has seen the Sphinx will enter the pyramid. The pyramid is a temple of resurrection, and not of worship. It is a temple not for symbolical acts but for instruction. It is a sepulchre. People can create a lot of mystification about it, but as the pyramid is hewn in stone, its essential language cannot be destroyed. In our opinion, everyone who has seen the Sphinx from within, and everyone to whom the Sphinx has spoken, like Prince Thotmes, will be able unconditionally to understand the stone language of the pyramid. Let us try to understand some of this language. The pyramid is a huge and impressive construction. You can imagine this if you keep in mind that its height was originally nearly 147 meters and that the length of its sides is 230 meters. This created an enormous surface. The interior, to the extent that it is known, is rather strange. There are parts of the pyramid that are completely unknown, and in its totality we can discover the complete picture of the microcosm that has to transfigure. In addition, it shows the way the process must be undertaken and led in complete self-freemasonry. The original name of the Great Pyramid was Horizon of Chufu. We could translate this as the complete perspective on the path that is offered in the pyramid. To be able to understand this, we will have to study the Egyptian concept of Chuf, or Chufu. This concept is that of dialectics, the fact that there is an absolute division, an unbridgeable chasm between this world and the original kingdom. In addition, Chufu points the way to liberation. It lifts the candidate up into the life of the soul. We would speak of the radiation of the Holy Spirit that enters the microcosmic being, not only to point out the path to the candidate, but also to help him. In that ancient world of thought, Chufu was thought to be active in the east, in the land of the dawn. The candidate was the son of the sun, who was headed for the rising sun. With the help of Chufu, he was lifted up into the aloe field of Ra, the sun god, the Christ. The symbol of the aloe is obvious. Aloe is a type of wood with a very pleasant fragrance and is the most valuable incense in the east. Thus, the candidate was led into the lands of the imperishable food mentioned in the Book of the Dead. You have undoubtedly heard of the Egyptian Book of the Dead. That is what we call it today. In days long ago, this wondrous book was known as the ritual. We could also say, the process. These days it is called the Book of the Dead, because it apparently describes the journey of the dead through the transition planes, the breakthrough of the dead into the heavenly planes of yonder side. But if you were to hold this view, just like many Egyptologists, you would be making a big mistake. Just as the modern religious person imagines the kingdom of heaven to be in the spheres behind the veil, so the adherents of the Egyptian cults thought exactly the same. Just as there is lack of knowledge about the universal teachings today, so it was then. In the same way as there are imperishable traces of the universal teachings in our lands, and the transfiguristic witnesses speak to us right through everything if only we will listen, so it was in the lands of the Nile, those glorious ancient realms of a faded civilization. one of the eternal witnesses of those days and of today, was and is the ritual, the process, or the Book of the Dead. The Book of the Dead is not Egyptian. It existed long before there were any Egyptians. It is a remarkably pure building block of the universal teachings. It is so hieroglyphic, so veiled, and so exclusively comprehensible to those who have eyes to see and ears to hear, that the priests of dialectics judged it unnecessary to mutilate it. However, it was used as a basis for the creation of all sorts of cults of this nature, but these were explained in other scriptures, and so we can say that far above the ancient Egyptian culture tower, three tremendous witnesses, the Sphinx, the pyramid or horizon of Chufu, the ritual or process. And oh marvel, these three witnesses form a unit. They belong together. We said that the Sphinx makes the call and that the pyramid points out the path. And it is the ritual, which teaches the process of how the path must be walked. We could say, therefore, that the pyramid is a stone monument of the process. Everything of which the ritual testifies is represented in the pyramid. The ritual explains everything that is hewn into the pyramid. What the Sphinx invites you to do, namely to liberate the heavenly man, is explained by the ritual and the pyramid, step by step, from beginning to end, in minute detail. We have told you that the Sphinx stares towards the east, towards the eastern horizon, towards the horizon of Chufu, towards the aloe field of Ra. Well, in the ritual, the king's chamber of the pyramid, the final goal of the path, the homecoming of the candidate is called the Chamber of the Great East. The aim to which the Sphinx tries to awaken us is realized in the Great East. It is certain that if you begin to study the old classical ritual and enter the pyramid on this basis, it will seem to you as a pupil of the spiritual school, as if everything is very familiar to you. Then it will turn out that in an unsuspected way, the school has been wanting to go the path with you for many years, the path that is the same yesterday and today, the path that was walked thousands of years ago already by our predecessors, the path which they have hewn in stone and described in a ritual, a heritage that has been saved for us up to this day, and with which we can serve others in the international work of our school. It will be clear to you now that the time has come for clear awareness of and certainty about all the work to be done, that the result will be all the sounder and mightier. And it will also be your task as a pupil to attune yourself more and more to that awareness and certainty. The spiritual school of the Golden Rosicross teaches that the chronology of the pyramid refers to the activities of the helping brotherhood on earth. The work of this brotherhood is carried out with clockwork precision, according to a definite plan, from epoch to epoch, without any obstacle. And as a kind of reflex, we see it taking place in the course of dialectical humanity, from epoch to epoch. The development of the new era started in August 1953 and will become clearly apparent around the year 2000. Whether that era will turn out to be what people imagine is a thing we very much doubt, even though many cries of joy will fill the air. Let us prepare ourselves to make our spiritual school meet the demands of the coming urgent work.